This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. The Political Junkie Roadshow is happening tonight at the Cincinnati Masonic Center downtown, featuring the men who made Wednesday afternoon's appointment listening. The Political Junkie Ken Rudin and former host of Talk of the Nation Neil Conan. They're in town for the live show. They're joining us this afternoon in Studio A at CET with a live audience, along with WVXU's Howard Wilkinson to talk politics, midterm elections, ask a trivia question, and take your calls and questions at 513-419-7100. Everybody, please join me in giving a big welcome to Ken and Neil.
Stop that, Ken.
That wasn't me. That wasn't me, I swear.
We'd also like to say a special welcome to everyone in the studio audience today, especially the students from Hughes STEM High School. Welcome to Cincinnati Edition. Now, if you haven't gotten your tickets for the Political Junkie Roadshow, you can still buy them at the door tonight. The show starts at 7:30 at the Cincinnati Masonic Center, located at 317 East 5th Street next to the Taft Theater. And Ken and Neil, great to see both of you.
Great to be here.
And Ken, get us rolling. What's the trivia question for today?
The trivia question, of course, there will be a lot of trivia questions tonight. One of the trivia questions would be, what were you thinking when you invited Ken and Neil to Cincinnati?
But we don't know.
Exactly. But the trivia question for this show is, who is the longest-serving female member of Congress in Ohio history?
Okay. Longest-serving female member.
Right. Not the longest female, the longest-serving female.
Longest-serving female member. Okay. Well, if you think you know the answer, give us a call, 513-419-7100. If you're successful at foiling Ken's attempt to stump you, you will win a Political Junkie button, which will make you the envy of your friends and family. Right, Ken?
Exactly. Although yeah. What I would do is I'd put it up on eBay immediately.
Well, it also makes a nice gift for the holidays, doesn't it?
Yes,
you can re-gift
right.
Collect them. Swap them with your friends.
Howard, draw the first pitch.
We just heard on the newscast Speaker Boehner, who is, of course, from right up the road here, talk about President Obama and his executive order on immigration, and was saying that it's made comprehensive immigration overhaul impossible with Congress, which I would say is true because he's already done it. What is the fallout, political fallout of this going to be in terms of his relations with Congress?
Well, first of all, I mean, the history of this is obviously undeniable. You have the first African-American president, President Obama, and John Boehner, who's the first person of color to be Speaker of the House.
Yes.
So I think that's very... Is this on?
I got the joke.
Okay, thanks. No, but here's the thing, though. I mean, the Republican is saying this is an example of an imperial presidency, that he's acting without Congress's input. But President Obama, for the longest time, at least since June of 2013, when the Senate voted overwhelmingly to support this immigration overhaul, the House has not acted. Boehner has said throughout all of this year, we're going to do it. We didn't do it. Obama obviously got tired of waiting and said the Congress is dithering and said, okay, it's time that we do something. And now Boehner and the Republicans are up in arms.
It's fair to mention the president also said he was going to do it before the election, then changed his mind when he was various Democratic senators trying to run for re-election, all of whom I think lost, asked him to delay it till after the
election.
Isn't
that ironic, though, that the reason he waited until after the election, because he was afraid it would put these Democratic senators in jeopardy, but Mark Udall, Mark Begich, Mark Pryor, only people named Mark apparently, Kay Hagan, all the Democrats.
Put them in jeopardy, put them in retirement.
Exactly.
Well, they were already in danger. I mean, there was no question about that.
No question.
Immigration reform or not.
Might they not have been better off running on this as an issue in retrospect?
That's my question. I mean, you know, could they have made this a good campaign issue?
I think Mark Udall in particular would have been helped by it.
In Colorado, it might have been a good issue for him.
But the fact is there was not going to be a bipartisan bill that's going to be passed out of the House of Representatives. The House majority clearly says there will be no major legislation that passes unless the majority of the majority approves it. There is no way immigration reform is going to get the majority of the Republican Party in this Congress or the next Congress coming in January. And so, interesting though, what will it be? Its effect be on the 2016 race?
Mm-hmm.
The person we've not heard from on this yet is Jeb Bush.
Actually, we have heard from him.
Yes,
we have heard from him, and he is really. in the quandary, because Jeb Bush is one of those few Republicans who realizes that the Republican Party not acting on immigration is to their own peril.
Right.
The fact that they're slow on it, the fact that they're not realizing the political potential of all these Latino votes, the Republican Party is hurting. When we heard Mitt Romney in 2012 talking about self-deportation, I mean, Hispanic voters said this is just nuts. But at the same time, he also says that the Republican Party has to have an alternative. And the thing is, Obama has been threatening to do this executive action on immigration for a long time now.
2 years, yeah.
And
yeah.
You would think that the Republican Party might have had an alternative plan in mind, and they did not.
But if Jeb Bush speaks out on this,
either he undercuts his own stance, pro-immigration stance, or he undercuts his own position within with the base of the party in the upcoming primaries.
Exactly.
It's going to be very difficult for him.
Every time Jeb Bush goes before a conservative audience, he gets hooted down, not only because of immigration reform, but Common Core education standards. He may be the strongest Republican candidate in 2016. I mean, who knows? But at the same time, the electorate that nominates the Republican Party presidential nominee is not the Jeb Bush kind of party.
Yeah, they're not. But then in the end, as you know, the Republicans usually end up nominating a candidate like
a more mainstream
candidate.
Romney, McCain, people like that.
But it's very difficult in the early primaries to get over that hump.
And the early primary Republican primaries, it could be hard getting all those people on stage.
Yes, that's correct.
Ken, Texas' new governor says he's going to challenge the president's immigration policy at court. And because the federal government it's always been deemed that they have plenary power, absolute power when it comes to immigration, how likely is it that this Texas case actually gets into the courts?
I don't know how likely this is to get into the courts, but a lot of Republicans have been quoting President Obama in the last 2 years saying that I would never do something like this. I would never do this kind of executive action because it would show an imperial presidency. It would be beyond my powers. Fox News the last couple of days has shown President Obama saying that over and over and over again. So a lot of Republicans are saying that all we have to do is quote Obama on this. But, of course, the president has it in his power. It may not be politically the smartest thing or the best thing, but it's certainly a legal thing.
It does not help the Republican case that the previous presidents who did exactly this, not on this scale, but exactly this, included Ronald Reagan and H.W. Bush.
Well, not to the – exactly. That's the point. Well, not to that extent.
Not to this scale, right. But they issued executive orders providing a basis for people here illegally to stay and get work permits.
Yeah, and some of them issued many more.
And many more.
Many more.
Well, President Reagan signed an amnesty bill that was passed by Congress, but then he extended it to another 100,000.
Yeah.
Governors taking it to court is interesting because they would have what the legalese called standing. They would be hurt. They would be required to be, you know, the state would have a case in court. The Congress would not. Though Congress today, interestingly, all those threats all along that they were going to take the president to court for overstepping his authority, supposedly, on the health care law in terms of how it was enacted, they did take him to court today, finally, on that. I suspect, I'm no Nina Totenberg, but I suspect they're going to find, the court's going to find the Congress does not have standing to bring that case, and it'll get thrown out.
Ken, so far I think everybody's stumped on the trivia question. Can you give it again?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
The question is, who is the longest-serving female member of Congress in Ohio history?
Okay, if you think you know the answer to that, come on, give it a try. 513-419-7100. And studio audience, feel free to join in as well if you think you know the answer to the question. So,
Wait, there's a hand.
There's a hand.
Marcy Kaptur?
Marcy Kaptur, yes.
That happens to be the correct answer.
Hey, wait a second.
Good job. Wonderful.
She was elected in 1982, and of course, in that redistricting in 2000. I'm sorry? Against Dennis Kucinich, right, but she's been in Congress since 83. She is the longest serving female member of Congress in Ohio history.
Very good. Very good.
Ding, ding.
That
ding.
Was my job, by the way, today.
To ring the triangle.
Ring the triangle.
Make sure
Ken,
you get your button from
say?
Ken.
I saw it.
What does that say?
Okay. Howard had it.
Okay.
Don't let Ken renege on this. Make sure you get the button from
Ken. She'll get the button.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
Congratulations.
Not a social studies teacher.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation with Ken Rudin and Neil Conan. You can also email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And we're talking about immigration reform, the Affordable Care Act. Couldn't the Republicans just take the tactic of defunding the president's initiatives on these things?
It will be difficult on immigration because the agency that will be doing most of the work on immigration is funded by fees and is not subject to budgetary efforts by Congress. There will be some aspects of this that they can try to defund. We'll have to see how that goes. But on the health care law, I think we're going to see quite a bit more on the health care law as they try to defund parts of it, and we're going to have to see how that goes.
And we keep talking about, I mean, there are several Republicans, like Ted Cruz of Texas, who talk about the possibility of shutting down the government in case they don't, you know, succeed against the president. Now, of course, the Republicans did shut down the government in October 2013. The Republican brand was abysmal after that, 9% approval ratings. But my argument is that it obviously wasn't long-term problems.
Yeah, it wasn't lethal. Yeah.
Because they did so well in Tuesday's, in the November 4th elections.
But still, you have Mitch McConnell on the Senate side and John Boehner on the other side who would like to avoid that.
Well,
they're going to have problems within their own caucus.
I agree completely, but one way to have avoided that is to have had an alternative the Republicans keep saying we're not going to support an immigration bill that doesn't have strong border security, but every bill, including the Senate bill that was passed in 2013, has strong border security.
And the president's order yesterday included additional measures for border
security. And that's why I'm so surprised the Republicans didn't have an alternative to say, well, yes, we do have this plan, X, Y, or Z. Even if the president didn't support it or would veto it, at least the Republicans could make the case, here's our plan. And throughout this whole time, they still didn't have one.
They haven't presented their alternative to the health care law either.
Yeah.
In other words, here's our plan. This is how we're going to change it.
Well, they've offered plans, or individual Republicans have offered plans in the past, but they've been shot down by the rest of
the Republican caucus. You run into the problem with the base of the Republican Party.
Right.
Unless you're saying we will tear it out root and branch, you're going to be hooted out. And the problem is parts of that law are very popular. In fact, if you do the polling, many parts of that law are popular. It's just when people are asked about it as a whole, it's unpopular.
It's just remarkable listening to the president last night, and when he said deporting millions of people is not who we are, but who's been deporting these people all along? It's been President Obama. Obama has deported more people than any other previous president combined. So I mean, obviously—
But just, not millions, 440,000, something like that.
But I'm just saying, just saying the argument is that for the Republicans, for the Democrats to make the case how awful this is, it's been the president who's been the deporting. But he did say that, which I thought was remarkable, he said that anybody who is not, now that you're not being deported, you can come to the Cincinnati Masonic Center tonight at 7:30 and listen to this. That's great.
Tickets are available
the
door.
Good seats still available.
And more trivia questions.
We will continue our conversation with Ken Rudin and Neil Conan after the break. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney, along with WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. We're coming to you from Studio A at CET today. We have a great audience here, along with our guests Ken Rudin and Neil Conan, who are in Cincinnati for their Political Junkie Roadshow tonight at 7:30 at the Masonic Center downtown. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Ken and Neil, we have questions from students in Pete Wood's social studies class at Hughes High School, and this is part of the New Democracy in Me initiative supported by the Charles H. Dater Foundation. And one of the questions they submitted is, what comments or concerns do you have about the recent elections?
No, not much.
Well, you know, President Obama has always talked about, and he said this after 2008, and he was right. He said elections have consequences. Well, obviously, it's interesting that in presidential elections, we've seen that the Democrats can hold their own because it's a much larger, different, more diverse electorate. African-Americans, women, younger people. In the midterm elections, that's usually not the case, and we saw the Republicans winning overwhelmingly in 2010 when they picked up 63 House seats, and in 2014 when they picked up the Senate as well as adding to their House majority. So it was a thumping, and, you know, I mean, I remember after George W. Bush got walloped and the Republicans got walloped after 2006, he said, look, you know, we got our heads handed to us. It doesn't feel that President Obama sees this as a resolution or a referendum on his policies. He's saying that, you know, I'm not chastened at all. I'm still going to make sure that my last 2 years of my presidency is going to be as active and as, you know, important as ever. But it was a big thumping, a Republican historic election.
Next question, is it true that you and Neil fight frequently? No, that's not a real question.
No, we don't, do we?
No.
I hate what you're wearing, though.
Interesting part about that is also the foreign policy when presidents are having difficulty with domestic policy.
Right.
The president went to China and negotiated an important trade deal and an even more important environmental agreement with China, first time China has ever committed itself to peak its carbon emissions. He then went to the Group of 20 summit in Australia and stood down Vladimir Putin. It's going to be interesting. And on Monday, a very important day, and that's the deadline for a nuclear deal with Iran. So Secretary of State Kerry is over there trying to negotiate a last-minute agreement, and it will be fascinating to see if they come back with a deal. Obviously, the devil's in the details, but how now the Chairman McCain is going to be greeting this proposed deal with Iran.
This is something I've been thinking about lately is if the economy in this country continues, you know, going along pretty well. In 2016, in the presidential election, a lot of these international issues may come to the forefront, and mm-hmm. it may be a different kind of a presidential election than we've had in recent years.
Well,
if we're still having problems in the Middle East, or...
Well, you're certainly not going to have Democrats running on their record.
Right.
They certainly didn't this year.
Yeah, no, that's
so
true.
So it'll be fascinating to see what they do. Obviously, two years from now, who knows how the war against ISIS is going to be going
right.
in the Middle East. Who knows what the situation in Afghanistan is going to be, whether it will end up being as chaotic and catastrophic as the situation in Iraq after the American pullout.
And who knows what President Obama's approval numbers
yeah.
will be in 2016. Remember the famous Alison Lundgren Grimes, who refused to say over and over again, and this, of course, was probably a mistake, who she voted for,
right.
but she didn't hesitate at all to say, but I'm a Hillary Clinton Democrat. So Hillary Clinton may bring to the table far more than the president does, at least in 2016.
And Ken, it's still a fact that the Electoral College map still favors Democrats.
You know, it's funny. Not too long ago, we used to say the exact opposite.
Yeah,
when Reagan
right.
won two in a row
exactly.
and then the first Bush, we kept saying it was a Republican lock mm-hmm. on the Electoral College. It seems to be, I agree with you, Howard, for that. If you look at 2012, except for North Carolina, every swing state, Ohio, Florida, Virginia, Colorado, Iowa, New Hampshire,
Nevada,
mm-hmm. all those states went for President Obama. So the Republicans
yes.
are going to have to figure out some kind of way of replicating what they can do in Congress in the battle for the presidency.
And find a way of opposing this action by the president on immigration without alienating Latino voters again.
Further alienating.
Another question from the audience. What do you think about the Republicans gaining the majority of the U.S. Congress?
It's going to be, it is a tremendous achievement, first of all, and you have to congratulate them. Remember, after the last presidential election, everybody said the Democrats had completely outclassed them in the ground game, the use of metadata and identifying voters and getting them to the polls. Republicans matched that and clearly surpassed that in places like Florida, in places like even Virginia, much closer than anybody gave it credit for being, certainly North Carolina, Colorado. These were places where the Democratic ground game was in place and ready to go, and the Republicans won. So they had a clearer, much more appealing message, and they were able to match the Democrats in the ground game and the money game. So first of all, great congratulations to the Republicans. They did a fantastic job this time around.
This is a very important point that Neil makes, because we always talk about the money and how much money you need.
Right.
Both Romney and Obama had the same money in 2012, but as Neil pointed out, the Democrats had, it's one thing to blanket the airwaves with commercials. It's another to have troops on the ground, and I'm not talking about Syria, I'm talking about this country, and going and ringing doorbells. The Democrats had it. The Republicans learned from that 2014 lesson and picked it up in 2012 lesson and picked it up in 2014.
Well, that's one of the concerns. I mean, particularly like in Ohio, a swing state, that Obama.
That's somebody knocking on your door right now for the 2016 election.
Yeah. Right. Well, that Obama ground operation, which was amazing, is not going to be there. And something else is going to have to take its place.
But there's a Clinton ground game, and we saw, Bill Clinton won handily in his two times.
Yes.
Not that Bill Clinton is the same as Hillary Clinton, but just as all these constituencies were so excited by the Obama candidacy in 2008, Hillary Clinton could excite those same people. I mean, of course, we don't know what's going on. I mean, does Elizabeth Warren run? Is there a battle for the nomination? I think one of the reasons Obama turned out to be such a good candidate in 2008 is that he was challenged strongly for the nomination. If Hillary Clinton gets a pass for the nomination, that may not be in her best interest. Mm-hmm.
That goes along with another question we have from the audience.
She's going to have to beat that Jim Webb.
Another question from the audience was, will any Democrats seriously run against Hillary, or is she just a shoo-in as their presidential candidate?
I was joking about it today. The former Senator James Webb from Virginia did announce the formation of a presidential committee today. So he is clearly seeking the nomination. He hasn't formally declared, but that's the legal equivalent.
But he's the front runner.
He's the front runner.
Exactly. Well, I mean, that's a good question. If you asked us this question in 2007 and even early 2008, we would say Hillary Clinton can't be stopped. I mean, Obama is interesting. John Edwards is interesting.
But they were out there running, organizing.
Yeah.
There is nobody doing that right now.
That's true.
Right.
And isn't it interesting that we have a sitting vice president, a reclining vice president, he doesn't have a sitting, but for the most part, I mean, when does a vice president get turned down in his bid for the presidency when the job is open? Al Gore got it in 2000, the nomination, George H.W. Bush in 1988, Hubert Humphrey in 68, Nixon in 60. I mean, you have to go back a long way to see a vice president getting turned down, but I can't see. At least if you look at the numbers, there seems to be no groundswell for a Biden candidacy.
Yeah, there seems to be no enthusiasm for that whatsoever.
No. But what I like about Biden, the first 3 hours of his campaign speech are the best part.
Yeah.
If you could, the first, they're really good stuff, but it gets a little tiring after that.
You mentioned Mitt Romney earlier. Is there a sense as to whether Mitt Romney is going to try to run again?
No, okay. I don't think so at all. But I do have a trivia question.
Okay.
For the audience, maybe.
Okay.
Mitt Romney was the unsuccessful presidential candidate in 2012, right? And there's some people are talking about 2016. Who was the last unsuccessful presidential candidate who was renominated 4 years later?
Do they get a button if they get it
right?
They do. There you go. 419-7100 if you think you know the answer to that, or audience members, if you happen to know the answer to that, chime in.
Boy, I put everybody to sleep.
Okay.
Neil was starting to say something.
Well, I don't get a button anymore.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I never get a button, so.
Come on, kids. Don't make me stop the car.
Wait a minute. We think we have somebody with an answer here?
Coming?
Major party.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Okay. All right.
Well, 513-419-7100, if you think you know the answer to that question.
The Socialist Workers
give it a try.
Is a major party.
Oh, here,
yeah, somebody in the audience? Here?
Pardon?
Adlai Stevenson is the correct answer.
Oh, ding, ding, ding.
The audience has a clean sweep going here. Congratulations.
It's going to give the hole in the shoe clue.
Yeah, but, very good.
My dog started salivering when you made that noise. Salivering?
Slobbering.
Yeah. Slobbering, yes.
I did, too.
Yeah, right.
So, Ken, it's been more than 2 weeks since the midterm election. The GOP's picked up 8 seats in the Senate. They could pick up a 9th, depending on what happens in that runoff election in Louisiana. Do you have any sense of what could happen in that race, either you or Neil?
It does not look good for the Democrat Mary Landrieu running for reelection. She's behind double digits. The Democratic senatorial campaign has pulled the money out of the race. Usually that's raising the white flag.
I mean, she was in trouble to begin with, and they kept talking about maybe if the Senate, the Keystone XL pipeline passed in the Senate, it would be a victory for her. But we had somebody on the Political Junkie show this week, an analyst there, who said that the dynamics have not changed. The fact is that it's still about Obama, that Mary Landrieu is linked with Obama, and that's toxic in Louisiana, where his numbers are just abysmal. She's been in runoffs before. This is seeking her fourth term. She's made it close before. A lot of people have counted her out before, but this time the dynamics seem to be really not in her favor.
The one wild card, it will be a very small electorate, so some subtle shift might.
And are Democrats enthused? I would think not.
I would think not.
Yeah. Well, how is the failure of the Keystone Pipeline vote going to play out in Louisiana?
It may not. I mean, of course, on the House side, it was Louisiana Congressman Bill Cassidy who pushed it through in the House, and it passed the House. Basically, Mary Landrieu was hoping for 60 votes in the Senate to avoid a Democratic filibuster to get that passed, and she was not able to do that.
She was also the chairwoman of the Energy Committee in the United States Senate, so thereby saying, look, I can get things done even as the ranking member. I'm here for Louisiana. One of the curiosities, of course, is the Keystone XL pipeline would not run to Louisiana. No. It goes to Texas.
Yeah.
Well, do we get a replay of this once the GOP has taken control
in
January?
It'll pass the Senate in January. And the question is, will the president, who says he opposes it because there's a process underway whereby the State Department review is underway and he's going to make a decision after that, he may veto it. He may veto it on that ground. He may veto it on environmental grounds. And it's hard to argue at this point that the country needs the oil as the gas prices continue to go down.
Yeah, you think he's going to be using that veto power more?
He's going to have to.
In the next 2 years.
Right. Well, up to now, he didn't need it because he had Harry Reid in the Senate blocking these House bills.
Sure.
Now, if it passes both the House and
that's
the Republican
his only
House.
Option.
Exactly.
You know, one thing, this is, you know, I'm Ohio-centric about politics, but Rob Portman, our junior senator from Ohio, was in charge of fundraising for the Senate campaigns this year. And, you know, they won. Does that raise his standing? Because he's sounding more and more like a possible presidential candidate every day.
Rob Portman, to me, is one of those Republicans who would do so well, theoretically so well in a general election, but have no chance in states like Iowa or South Carolina, mm-hmm. where the electorate is very, very conservative.
Yeah.
And, I mean, anybody supporting same-sex marriage. Now, look at even the Democrats in 2008. Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, they all defined marriage as between a man and a woman in 2008. That was unheard of, the thought of same-sex marriage. Now that, you know, in those short time since then, it's been a different viewpoint, but not necessarily in the Republican Party. There's so many reasons.
Certainly
why.
Not with the Republican electorate. But exactly. What Rob Portman looks like to me is a vice presidential
candidate. Well, exactly.
I
think that's probably more likely. But couldn't you slug through those early primaries in places like South Carolina Iowa?
Ask
Rudy Giuliani how well that worked out.
Yeah. Well, that's true. Yeah.
He was hoping to be president of Florida and didn't get it. But that's what happens. I mean, so far, the focus on Iowa and New Hampshire is so important. Think of Al Gore and Bill Bradley. Gore beat Bradley in Iowa, then New Hampshire, then it was over.
Yeah.
I mean, so sometimes these nominations, unlike Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama that went on through April and May and June, for the most part, these nominations battles could be over sooner than expected.
I did like Senator Bradley's idea for reform for the primary process, though. He said it should be decided by jump shots from the top of the key.
He'd have an unfair advantage, wouldn't he?
Portman as a vice presidential candidate, the same-sex marriage actually might help.
I disagree.
In a general election.
As a vice presidential candidate.
I remember.
In a general election.
But I remember at the night, I mean, I think the Republican Party is far more conservative now than it was in 1988.
Yeah.
And I remember when they were talking about Tom Kaine, the governor of New Jersey, as vice president in 88. And back then, even the Richard Vigories and the conservatives said, he's pro-choice on abortion. There's no way a conservative party will support a pro-choice candidate. And I suspect that's the same with Portman. What's interesting is that his Senate term is also up in 2016.
Yes.
And, of course, by law, he can run for both, although he said he will not run for both.
Right.
I mean, you know, the LBJ law that allows him to run for both offices. The question is whether, I mean, obviously, he wants it. He's going to send people out in these early states, and he'll probably get a message sooner than later. But I suspect he doesn't run for that reason.
Well, I'll tell you the truth. I think he's not going to run
for
presidency either. I think he's going to run for re-election, but, you know, we shall see.
How about a Kasich-Portman ticket?
Yeah.
It would be interesting.
That'd be very interesting.
It's also unconstitutional, or you lose the Ohio electoral vote.
Exactly.
You can't have it in the same state. But I was always saying, when Tim Pawlenty was talking about running for
right.
president, and Wilson Good was the former mayor of Philadelphia, I always wanted a Good and Pawlenty ticket. I thought that would be really good.
513-419-7100. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can also email talk@wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Ken and Neil, we got an email from Tony from Dayton, who said, it's so good to hear the two of you together again.
Oh, well, that's very nice of you.
That is very nice of him to say. So thank you, Tony. We appreciate the comment.
I mean, I just tell Tony that Neil and I miss it more than you know. Some of the people in the audience also said how much they miss it, and we do too. It was so much fun, and not only was it so much fun, that Neil and I would just look at each other sometimes during a question or a call-in or a guest, and we would just giggle, and we just had so much fun. And it was just, you know, we miss it.
Another question from the audience. Are you looking forward to the 2016 presidential election?
Absolutely. It's going to be great.
You're political junkies. Why not? Right?
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
He's looking forward to, you know, next year. You know, it's going to be an absolutely fascinating. The Democrats, of course, were structurally challenged in the Senate races this time around because they had so many seats to defend. Next time around,
different story.
That's the Republicans. And
right.
in a year when you're going to get that surge to the polls, usually, which brings out a lot more Democratic voters, so it's going to be much more difficult for Republican Senate candidates next time around.
Well, about two dozen of them, Republicans?
25 to 10.
25 to
that's
10.
That's how much
right.
it is. And that's why winning eight seats so far, a net of eight seats, plus the likelihood of beating Mary Landrieu on December 6th, gives the Republican Party a cushion, at least, in advance of perhaps losses in 2016.
It is interesting, though. There is nobody, I have not seen anybody, projecting any way Democrats could retake the House of Representatives.
Yeah.
More with Ken Rudin and Neil Conan after the break. And you can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney, along with WVXU's Howard Wilkinson. Joining us this afternoon, our political junkie Ken Rudin, and the only man capable of keeping Ken under control, Neil Conan. Now, you can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And lots of good questions coming in from the audience this afternoon. One question had to do with arguments against the Keystone Pipeline, which mm-hmm. we were talking about earlier. The first one is they've been studying the issue for years, so that sounds like it's an excuse. And
that's right.
Why is the pipeline any more of an environmental danger than, say, transporting it by train or truck, which is the common way of doing it right now?
It may be less of an environmental danger than transporting it by train or by rail, by truck. The question being, this would open the tar sands, the Athabasca tar sands, into more exploitation than they are now. This is the dirtiest kind of petroleum you can get. So the amount of carbon that's generated just in cleaning it up, the bitumen, as it's called, cleaning it up to get it into the pipeline so it can get sent somewhere and refined, that is a significant factor. But the environmentalists say tapping that reserve of carbon, releasing that carbon into the atmosphere, would doom any effort to keep the global warming below 2% centigrade. So that's the argument against it. environmentally. The Canadians, it's a conservative government in Canada right now, they say if we don't build a pipeline, the XL, there's already a pipeline, but the XL pipeline with larger capacity, if that's not built, we'll build a pipeline to the Pacific and ship it to China, which they could do. It's a bold engineering challenge. It also, that pipeline run through a lot of First Nation lands, as they call them in Canada, reservations we would call them here. So that would be a challenge with a lot of litigation.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. And also, we've been talking about the Affordable Care Act, too, and I was wondering about this, Ken. The GOP has tapped constitutional scholar Jonathan Turley to lead their case. Have we ever seen a similar situation where we've had one branch of government suing the other branch of government?
We've had individual members suing the president, but we've never had the House as a whole suing a president. That's never happened before. And again, you know, a lot of people say, well, this issue has been decided by the Supreme Court. It's been decided, the fact that the Republicans have brought this up maybe 30, 35 times in the past Congress, or at least since the law was passed, and it's been upheld every time. And yet, if you think of the candidates, the Republican candidates who ran in 2014, almost to a person, they said that, you know, you elect me, you will repeal it. Now, some Republicans were saying we'll improve it, and Democrats were saying we'll improve it as well. But as far as the legal challenge to it, that's unprecedented when you're talking about suing the president.
And Jonathan Turley is an interesting guy, by the way. He was a frequent guest on Talk of the Nation.
He's a well-respected constitutional
scholar. One of his big cases right now is the Sister Wives case. Where, having decided on gay marriage in a lot of places, he's saying, wait a minute, what's wrong with plural marriage if it's consenting adults?
Except the problem with that means you have additional mothers-in-law, and that's a problem, I would think.
Well, what do you think of the John Gruber videos that have arisen concerning Obamacare?
The messaging by the Democrats and the President of the United States about his health care law has been so bad that it's hard to believe it can get any worse. First of all, it's not going to have much of an impact in terms of the general public, because I'm not sure how many voters have actually seen the Gruber tape, or, you know, we'll figure it out. The lack of transparency where you're trying to hide the football in politics, that will come as a shock to anybody who spent his time in Washington, D.C., of course. But there's been such bad messaging all throughout that this comes as no great surprise that they've muffed it again. It's not going to help, but this is a very unpopular law to begin with. How much more unpopular can it get? Maybe as unpopular as Congress. Who knows?
Although I would make the case that you could have made, the Democrats could have made the argument in 2014 that for the most part it's been successful. More people are insured than ever before. That has worked. But it seemed like, because as Neil points out, the polls show it still has a net unfavorability, the Democrats, probably one of the best arguments they had for re-election in 2014 was the health care law, and they ran away from it. Now, of course, we're seeing premiums go up in 2015, so that could become another political football all over again.
But you're seeing, you've seen Republican governors, including the one in Ohio, accept parts of...
Some Republicans.
Some Republicans. Yeah.
Some Republican governors.
And taking the Medicaid.
Taking the Medicaid expansion, as John Kasich did here in Ohio, you know, and going out and defending it.
And interesting, because as Ken was saying, the Democrats didn't defend Obamacare. The Democrats did not say, wait a minute, you forget when this president took office, we were losing 700,000 jobs a month. Mm-hmm. We, the Democrats, with our stimulus bill and have saved the country from one of the great depressions in history. And they did not run on their record. They ran away from the president. They did not mention the economy. They ran a campaign that focused on, we're not those other guys. Mm-hmm. They tried to scare the electorate that the Republicans were extreme. The Republicans had a much more controlled message this time around than they had 2 years ago or 4 years ago, and they succeeded in painting their campaign was largely, we're not the other guys, but they said it better.
Think of what the Democrats did with the so-called war on women, attack running against the Republicans. I mean, we saw in Colorado... I mean, I don't mean to belabor this story, but Mark Udall was called Mark Uterus because he talked over and over and over again about women's reproductive rights. And sometimes voters are smart enough to know that there are other issues at hand there, and I think he overplayed his case. And he lost his seat.
Yeah.
Audience question, it pertains to what we're talking about with the ACA. Do you think when Barack Obama leaves the White House, the government will continue to supply people with Obamacare? What's its fate after he leaves office?
I don't see how they cannot. There are so many parts of this law that are so popular, to begin with the part where you can keep your kid on your health insurance until they're 26 years old, particularly that you could get health coverage at the same price despite prior conditions. Now, if you're going to keep that as a provision of a health care law, you're going to have to fund that. In other words, sick people get the same rates as healthy people. If you're going to do that, then you have to fund that by having healthy people sign up. How do you get healthy people to sign up? Well, you pay a tax penalty if you don't. That's the mandate. So it's a circular argument that comes back to there are parts of this law that are extremely popular. Many millions of people will be benefiting from it. By the time President Obama leaves office, it's going to be extremely difficult to take those benefits away.
So are you saying it's more likely it's going to be tinkered with rather than just outright repealed?
Yeah. I think you might even see, the tax on the medical implements.
Devices.
Yeah. That could go. In this next Congress, and as part of a deal, if the Congress and the President can work on anything at all.
And that's the big PS to everything, because the executive action on immigration already has soured whatever relationship there was to begin with. I mean, you'd think that, you know, it's not been so good for the last 2 or 6 years to begin with, but there was a sense after the election of 2014 that Republicans said, we're no longer the outside party, we're no longer the saying no party, we have to offer a narrative as well, an argument for us as well. But if the well has been poisoned already, it's going to hard to make the case that we don't see more of the same the next couple of years.
I should note that first initial was P. P-P-S.
Yeah. Yeah. 513-419-7100 to join the conversation. Let's talk with Ben from Hamilton. Good afternoon, Ben. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. My question was in regards to something I heard on the radio earlier. You were stating that there's a possibility of one of the pipelines being put through First Nation lands.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've heard on NPR earlier in the week that the nations are saying that if this is done, it's designated as an act of war.
You're confusing the two countries. That statement came out of the Oglala Sioux in Nebraska. I was talking about First Nations in Canada, but they're likely to say the same kind of a thing, yes.
Okay. Well, what I was curious about was, if that were to happen, what would that mean? Like, would we actually, or would Canada or the U.S. actually try to go to war with them, or?
No, it would mean that they would have to get, either the pipeline would be rerouted around Indian land, or if it's going to go in at all, or they might get a nice payment.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well, thanks very much.
Thanks for the call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Again, 513-419-7100 if you would like to join the conversation. Another one of the questions from the students in the class at Hughes has to do with, if you could get government to change something, what would it be?
Redistricting. Hmm. The way redistricting is done now, it is done by the states. It's done almost entirely. There's a couple of states where it's different, but it's almost done entirely by the party that is in power in years ending in zero, which is when the census comes out. The census comes out a lot of time, but it's the officially redistricting time, and they do it for maximum advantage of their party. The Republicans had a great year, for example, in 2010, controlled many state legislatures around the country. I mentioned earlier, there's nobody who sees a chance for the Democrats to retake the House of Representatives, no matter what kind of a wave election there is. That's because so many Republican legislatures have redistricted the seats to pack all the Democrats into as few districts as possible and to maximize the number of seats winnable by Republicans. That's not to say the Democrats, if they'd had a wave election, would not have done the same thing.
And they've done that for
decades.
And they've
done it before.
And for example, they did in 2010 in Maryland, where they won both houses.
For decades.
This is just the way it works. Federal elections should be run federally under the same set of law standards across the country. That's the one thing I would change.
And Ohio is a perfect example.
Oh,
I mean,
absolutely.
If you think of the state, the state's dynamics and the demographics,
right.
It's basically a 50-50 state. And then when you look at its congressional district, I think it's 12 Republicans
and four,
Democrats. And
right.
that's just, you know.
Exactly.
But as a PA.
And it's a purple state.
Right. But, I mean, of course, in Illinois in 2012, we saw the opposite. Democrats controlled everything in Illinois, the state legislature, the governorship, and Republicans got routed. So, I mean, it's whoever holds the power. But there are states like California, Arizona, Iowa, New Jersey. There are a growing number of states who say that it should be a nonpartisan, a non-political, non-legislature commission that draws the districts, and maybe that's the way with the future.
But what would that take? Would that take constitutional
amendment?
Yeah.
And you could tell what a riveting, charismatic candidate I would be. Redistricting.
Right. Yeah.
You got a lot of agreement, though, when you said that.
Well, you'd be amazed. I mean, I hear it from people all the time.
But it would take a constitutional amendment.
Particularly Democrats.
And a constitutional amendment, of course, has to be passed by three-quarters of both houses of Congress and then three-quarters of the states whose oxen would be gored by this very constitutional amendment.
So
its chances are...
slim to none and slim's left hand.
Well, it's as just as good as my being elected president.
But in some states, I mean, it may not be... That's why it will not be... a constitutional amendment, but what we saw in California, that voters changed the way that things would happen. In Arizona, the voters changed the way. So maybe you just have to do state at a time.
Yeah, well, voters had that opportunity in Ohio, too, but then they rejected it.
Yeah. Right. In New Jersey, it's the thickness of the envelope you're passed.
Yeah.
Let's talk with Sean in Florence. Good afternoon, Sean. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Oh, hello, gentlemen. I was just listening to your conversation, and I had an observation I wanted to bring out on the healthcare mandate. Just wanted to see if you have an opinion or if you've heard of polling that's been done to link all the features together. For example, the features that are very popular, like being able to stay on your plan to your parents' plan until you're 26. And, of course, I think probably the most popular is the ability to not be charged high premiums when you have pre-existing conditions. But what if those are popular, but it seems the most unpopular aspect of the Obamacare law is the mandate that everyone must buy insurance. Have those three all been looked at together in any kind of polling? Or if basically what I'm trying to say is you can have these features that you like, but you have to require everyone buy insurance. And then my opinion is that when people realize all of the features.
Wow.
Oh, got disconnected. But Neil, you were touching on this earlier. You were talking about the parts of the plan that are popular.
Interconnected. If you're going to keep the part where you've got the, the kids on that's not expensive. The part where you're keeping the people without the
pre-existing
conditions, and there's no cap on what you can, lifetime cap or yearly caps in terms of how much you can get from your insurance company, those are expensive, and they don't. You got to come up with the money somewhere. So if those are going to be preserved, in terms of polling, it's a pretty convoluted question to put in a poll, so I'm not sure that I've seen that polling.
But
I'm sure somebody's tried it.
I was going to say, in answer to Sean's question, I have seen numbers. Exactly right. Staying on your parents' plan is very popular. Pre-existing conditions is very popular. But it's the mandate that scares a lot of people, and that's why when you see polling showing that the American people oppose the ACA, it's mostly on the issue of the mandate. But Democrats and Republicans agree, and I think the president has agreed as well, that whatever tinkering needs to be done, let's do it. We can do this. But, of course, many Republicans say just outright repeal and then restore, and that's where they differ with each other.
We've got about a minute left, so let's talk to Jeff in Fairfield. Jeff, good afternoon. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Hope you're enjoying yourself.
Thanks.
We are indeed.
My question is, do you think the Benghazi attacks will hurt Hillary Clinton's chances in 2 years?
I'm not sure anybody's going to be remembering Benghazi in 2 years. I'm sure it'll be part of a Republican ad campaign, but it's hard to see. It has not hurt her popularity yet, so it's hard to see how it will in the future. I don't think there's any more barring more revelations to come, but I don't think there are any.
Time flies when you're having fun. Ken, Neil, Howard, thank you for joining us this afternoon. And also thanks to the great studio audience today. We really appreciate it. Be sure to join Ken Rudin and Neil Conan for the Political Junkie Roadshow tonight at 7:30 at the Cincinnati Masonic Center. You can still buy tickets at the door. The center is located at 317 East 5th Street next to the Taft Theater. Thank you for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available at WVXU.org. The producer for today's program was Pete Reitmeier with help from Kevin Reynolds and Jim Nolan. The technical director was Bruce Ellis. Also, thanks to the WVXU and CET engineers who made today's show possible, Don Danko, Bill Dean, Kevin Rawinski from WVXU, and Paul Verhagen from CET. I'm Mark Haney. Stay tuned for Science Friday, coming up next on 91.7 WVXU.